Is it true that Islam often leads to violence, but Christianity leads to peace? If that's so, why are there so many Christians in the military? Why do so many Christians push for the right to bear arms? We'll talk about it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to have a fascinating discussion today on The Line of Fire. On the one hand, there is no question that following Jesus means turning the other cheek, that following Jesus means laying down your life for others, that following the example of Jesus means put down your sword, take up your cross. On the other hand, there is no question that many Christians are involved in the military and feel it's an important part of their life and part of their service to our country, that there are many conservative Christians who are at the forefront of calling for the right to bear arms. How do we work these things out? Is Christianity, the Jesus faith, the true Jesus faith, I mean, Christianity comes in many forms, but is the true Jesus faith inherently pacifist? Is it clearly in contrast with radical Islam, or as some would say, true Islam, which obviously tends to violence and has, a lot more texts that are overtly violent texts in the Quran and the Hadith, the authoritative tradition? There's no question that you can contrast the teachings of Jesus and the teachings of Muhammad. No question that you can contrast much of Christian history and Islamic history. But is there a time and place for violence? Is there a time and place for just war? Is it that simple? Why is it that conservative Christians in America often tend to be hawks, often tend to be very strong in terms of standing with Israel in a military way? Why is it that many conservative Christians have been champions in the armed forces for years and have served our country sacrificially? Is that any different than Muslims fighting what they say is a holy war? We're fighting against causes and people and nations that we believe are doing evil. How does it work out? 866-34-TRUTH. I want to get your take on this. Are you someone who says, yes, I believe personally in turning the other cheek. Yes, I believe that if I was persecuted, I either flee or go to jail or die. I don't kill my persecutors. But if someone broke into my house to hurt my family, I'd stop that person. Do you make a distinction there? You think that Christians in other parts of the world should be actively defending themselves? If you had a kid at that school in Kenya, that university in Kenya, where 148 of those Christian young people were slaughtered in cold blood by radical Muslims, if you were involved with that school, would you have put security outside the doors if you hired Christian security because there are no police or army available? Would you have done that and known that you could have saved the lives of these young people, these young martyrs? Would you have done it? 866-348-7884. On a related note, a different but related note, Senator Rand Paul has declared his candidacy today. He is combining, I would say, libertarianism and conservatism to a certain extent. And the libertarian policies and some of our non-involvement policies with overseas nations, different nations around the world that his father, Ron Paul, would also advocate. How's that work out? Is that a more Christian philosophy? Is that a more Christian mentality in terms of our normal militaristic, let's go out, take out the bad guys mentality? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Are you a follower of Jesus that fights for the right to bear arms here in America? Follower of Jesus who says, yes, we should be involved in the military? We'll talk about it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Now, in the church where I came to faith, we would sing that from time to time. I never once, ever, for a split second I could remember, connected that song with going to war in a physical way. Never connected that song ever with taking up arms against an enemy. Always understood it in purely spiritual terms, as Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, endure hardship as a good soldier of Messiah Jesus. I understood that we were soldiers in a spiritual sense, but at the same time, let's say that we were going to war against an enemy. Let's say we were going to war against the Nazis. Would we not think that we were doing God's work in the process, or that it was a Christian thing to do to get involved with fighting against Nazis? 866-34-TRUTH. Is Christianity, or the true Jesus faith, inherently pacifist? Is it inherently different than Islam? I wrote an article last year called Why a Christian Al-Qaeda Doesn't Exist. And I explained that while there have been atrocities committed by professing Christians over the centuries, in doing so, they fundamentally violated both the teaching and example of Jesus. In contrast, professing Muslims who are committing atrocities around the world can find ample justification for their behavior in both the teaching and example of Muhammad. And I mentioned Islam is the plethora of such groups, from Hamas in Gaza to Hezbollah in Lebanon and Syria, from the Taliban in Pakistan and Afghanistan to Al-Qaeda worldwide, and from the ruling Muslim majorities in Iran and Sudan to the followers of fundamentalist Muslim preachers in America and the UK. I don't see a parallel to that among followers of Jesus. The question is, when is it right to stand? When is it right to fight? When is it right to bear arms? I'm not a hunter. My dad was senior lawyer in the New York Supreme Court. I grew up in New York City, Long Island, and didn't have kind of an outdoors hunting, gun handling background. It's still not my background. And for me, the whole emphasis on the right to bear arms as part of our American history, I understand the historic purpose and I understand the issues surrounding that, but sometimes I wonder why just kind of you associate conservative Christianity with the right to bear arms. Is that a strange equation? I'm just asking some questions. As for Christian involvement in the military, obviously, Christians, among others in the military, have made great sacrifices for our country for many decades now. We are indebted to them for our freedoms. There are some Christians, though, who say that under no circumstances can Christians participate in the taking of life, period. I want to play a couple clips for you, and then I want to get your take on this, and I want to get to as many calls as possible and hear you out and have some healthy interaction. John Wesley warned the British about pushing the Americans too far. And I quote this in my book, Revolution, The Call of the Holy War. The holy war of which we speak is the spiritual conflict, and one where we lay down our lives to save others rather than taking lives. Wesley said this: in spite of my long-rooted prejudice, I cannot avoid thinking, if I think at all, that an oppressed people ask for nothing more than their legal rights, and that in the most modest and inoffensive manner that the nature of the thing would allow. But waiving all considerations of right and wrong, I ask, is it common sense to use force toward the Americans? These men will not be frightened, and it seems that they will not be conquered as easily as was first imagined. They will probably dispute every inch of ground, and if they die sword in hand. But he was concerned about where this would lead. He said, but what are the opposing armies going to do? To shoot each other through the head or heart? To stab and butcher each other? Why so? What harm have they done to each other? Why, none at all. Most of them are entire strangers to each other, but a matter is in dispute relative to the mode of taxation. These countrymen, children of the same parents, are to murder each other with all possible haste to prove who is in the right. What an argument is this? What a method of proof. What an amazing way of deciding controversies. But Mark Twain said this, and Joey, grab for me clip number four, Michael Savage. Mark Twain said this: no people in the world ever did achieve their freedom by goody-goody talk and moral suasion, it being immutable law that all revolutions that will succeed must begin in blood, whatever may answer afterward. Listen to what Michael Savage said about persecuted Christians around the world today. Clip number four.
For the Christians to survive in a world of militant Islam, we must have a militant Christianity arise in this world. Because look at the Middle East. Tell me what turning the other cheek has gotten the Christians in Iraq. Tell me what turning the cheek has gotten the Christians in Syria. Wherever you look, turning the other cheek has gotten them a grave. Or have them set on fire. Only a militant Christianity can survive the 21st century. Only a more militant Judaism can survive the 21st century. And you must fight fire with fire. A militancy must replace a passivity.
Do you agree with Michael Savage? Do you agree with his point there? Or do you say that we overcome evil with good, we overcome hatred with love, we overcome violence with prayer? You say, oh yeah, easy for you to say, Mike Brown, sitting there in safety in America, you're not getting slaughtered with your families and having people burned alive and beheaded and crucified and all of this by Muslim militants that you could easily stop with a gun. Easy for you to say. Charles Spurgeon said this: the spirit of war is at the extremely opposite point to the spirit of the gospel. D.L. Moody: there's never been a time in my life when I felt that I could take a gun and shoot down a fellow being. In this respect, I am a Quaker. On the flip side, what if taking that gun out and shooting that person would save hundreds of lives or thousands of lives? Aren't you then saving life by doing it? Isn't there a right time, according to Romans, the 13th chapter, where the government bears the sword to punish evildoers? And this is simply our participation with the government to do that very thing. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, before I go to the phones, check out my latest article up on the Christian Post. How can Christians in the LGBT community live in harmony? The New York Times wants us to rewrite the Bible. I commented on an op-ed piece by Frank Bruni in the New York Times on the air yesterday. Then I wrote up my article last night, my response to his article, Bigotry, the Bible, and the Lessons of Indiana. He simply says, quoting another gay activist, we should be made to remove homosexual practice from the list of sins in the Bible. This is my response. You can read that by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest article. All right, we go to the phones. Mark in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello.
Hello.
I was going to touch mainly on the part related to the military.
Yes, please.
And Christians, carrying firearms. I've done a lot of reading, read the Bible many times, done a lot of studying, and, Jesus in the Bible was angry at times. It was righteous anger. Mm-hmm. And when he comes back, it's for wrath and for judgment. It's mm-hmm. not playing patty cake. The turn the other cheek really is ignore insults. And if somebody pushes you physically and it really doesn't hurt you, you ignore it. It doesn't mean allow yourself or your family to be murdered and slaughtered. If anybody was walking along with their daughter and somebody attacked them and was beating them mercilessly, and they had to intervene physically, and the only way they could stop this person from killing their daughter was to kill them, they would do that. Anybody mm-hmm. who believes in the right to keep and bear arms in the proper way, it's defensive purposes only. I've carried a firearm for almost 33 years. I've pulled it one time to protect myself and my family, far more my family. Never have I pulled it out of anger. And if we didn't have a military, we wouldn't exist as a country. There's nothing wrong. In fact, I think you're derelict in your duty. I don't think you're a true Christian if you can't defend the rights of those who need to be defended. It's a major, major difference between using physical force and violence. It's the absolute intent. If I save your life because somebody puts a gun to your head and I kill them to save you, I haven't violated God's sixth commandment. And if we're not going to do anything, if we're not going to defend ourselves, we know what will happen.
All right, I've got to jump in. Mark, great call. You've obviously thought about this a lot. What do you think about what Mark had to say, and how does it square when we're talking about persecution for the faith? Again, great call. Thank you, Mark.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let's listen to what Bill Maher had to say about the teaching of Jesus. He was comparing it to the teaching of Muhammad. Our first caller, Mark, clearly laid out the difference between non-retaliation, ignoring an insult, looking the other way. That Jesus taught us to do, quote, turning the other cheek, the difference between that and self-defense, the difference between that and having a healthy, strong military for your country. Would any of you that love and support the modern state of Israel tell them that they don't have the right to arm themselves against terrorism, against those who want to wipe them out? At the same time, it's very easy to say, well, look, the example of Jesus and the apostles, they were all killed. Jesus didn't fight back. The apostles didn't fight back. Christians persecuted through history. If they all fought back, then you would have just ended up with bloody wars. You wouldn't have even had a history of martyrdom. So how does that work itself out? 866-34-TRUTH. Clip number three, this is Bill Maher.
Jesus lays on that hippie stuff pretty thick. He has lines like, do not repay evil with evil, and do not take revenge on someone who wrongs you. Nonviolence was kind of Jesus's trademark. Kind of his big thing. To not follow that part of it is like joining Greenpeace and hating whales.
All right, so Bill Maher, in his typical approach, is going to say what he has to say, even the hippie stuff, but he does make some points that are worth discussing. 866-34-TRUTH. So here, according to tradition, John died a natural death among the apostles, and probably Matthew. According to tradition, the rest were martyred in the following ways. Peter was crucified upside down. Andrew, his brother, was crucified on an X-shaped cross. Jacob, James, son of Zebedee, was beheaded. Philip was crucified upside down. Bartholomew was drowned in a sack. Thomas was speared to death or shot with arrows. James, Jacob, son of Alphaeus, was stoned to death or crucified. Thaddeus was shot with arrows. Simon the Zealot was crucified. And Jesus said, if you're persecuted in one city, flee to another as opposed to fight back. So is that a different category? Is that different than someone breaking into your home? Is that different than protecting our country with a strong military? Are these different things? Or the right to bear arms that we have here in America? Did Peter do the same thing when he had a sword? Or did Jesus tell him, hey, put the sword down? Or was it just put the sword down when it came to trying to stop the crucifixion? In light of the radically violent nature of so much of Islam today and of Islamic expressions through history, this is a conversation that we are going to have from time to time. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Staten Island, New York. Andy, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, do you hear my voice?
I can hear you loud and clear, Andy.
Okay, wow. I want you to see a couple of things, and maybe you can see something that I don't see. Okay, in the beginning, if you see God, when man sinned it, okay, God killed an animal, all right? That's one. A lot because of disobedience. We look at Abraham, okay? Disobedience in there, too. Okay, we look at people that were destroyed because of the disobedience. Okay, you have to be lowly as a dove, swift like a serpent. okay? And I understand, he said, he who kills by the sword shall die by the sword, okay? But, you know, also, you know, in the book of Proverbs, you'll see a lot of things, you know, you're going to sow over what you weep. So it's a very tough, it's a tough topic there, but, you know, we are going to face a judge. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's no joke. You see,
so
see
Andy,
what I'm getting at?
Yeah, so Andy, your point is basically we're going to reap what we sow. And if we live violently, that we're going to reap violence, right? He who lives by the sword will die by the sword. Jesus said that. It's repeated in the book of Revelation. On the flip side, we're not just talking about violence for violence's sake. We're not thinking of advancing the gospel through violence. But yes, whatever we do, we'll stand before God. Appreciate the thoughts. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, Paul said, I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. So that was being whipped, being beaten, being stoned for the faith. That to him was bearing in his body the marks of the Lord Jesus. He didn't obviously have a belt with a notch in it for every infidel that he killed, obviously. But again, is that a totally separate category, persecution? And if so, then what happens when you're in a country like Syria or in a country like Iraq, when you have these violent Islamic forces fighting with each other, and that if the Christians were better armed, they wouldn't be getting slaughtered, and they're not looking to launch an offensive war just to be able to defend themselves? Now, I'm not advocating a point of view yet. I'm simply laying out thoughts. And if you miss any of the show today, just go to the website later today, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Go there later today, and you'll be able to listen to some of my concluding remarks and comments that I'll make at the end of each hour. But I want to hear from you. I want to raise questions. I want you to weigh in and dialogue with one another. Let's go over to Elmont on Long Island. Steve, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, how you doing, sir?
Very well, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you. I'm glad you have a show like this. Basically, how I see it is when Jesus was talking about the Beatitudes, he said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the kingdom. Blessed are the peacemakers. Where the politicians tell us that there's terrorists and all this stuff. If we, who are the children of light, would do our research, we would know that we are being propagandized and duped into, you know, going into some other person's land, some other country's land, and dictating, using the military as a thug military. And we're being called out as Christians by Michael Savage and all these Zionist Jews. I'm sorry to say that, but I'm telling you, we are being duped. We are being lied to. And Jesus never promoted war. Now, mm-hmm. to protect your family, yes. But these politicians to go over and fight terrorism, they are lying from all the research I've done. For 3 years, I've been doing an investigation. And I know I've done my homework. And I know what I'm talking about. I am not against anybody. And I'm not against government or anything like that. But I'm saying the Bible says to expose the darkness with the truth, and I speak the truth.
Yeah, hey, Steve, just gotta jump in. I've got a break coming up. I appreciate you weighing in. And as always, make sure you're doing research on all sides of the issues, all right? And let's recognize, yeah, politicians may have mixed motives. I don't doubt that. But there's a lot of evil and wickedness out there. And many times, as Americans, we are trying to fight that evil and wickedness. Remember, it was an attack on our soil, 9/11, that drew us in to much of this. Thank you for weighing in. All right, friends, I'm going to keep taking calls for another 90 minutes. So get on the phone right now. Join the discussion, 866-34-TRUTH. And when you have a minute later today, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. If you're one of my listeners that does not yet own the beautifully produced Tree of Life Messianic Family Bible, you can get it still this week with a very special resource offer, a gift we're sending you as well. So go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So when is it Christian to pick up the sword? When is it Christian to carry a gun? When is it Christian to fight in the military? When is it Christian to turn the other cheek? When is it Christian to not resist, even to the point of death? 866-34-TRUTH. Now, if you want to know the spirit of radical Islam, Ayatollah Khomeini expressed it as well as anyone. He said, Islam's holy war is a struggle against idolatry, sexual deviation, plunder, repression, and cruelty. And he said, those who study Islamic holy war will understand why Islam wants to conquer the whole world. All the countries conquered by Islam or to be conquered in the future will be marked for everlasting salvation. How do you do it? Khomeini said this, those who know nothing of Islam pretend that Islam counsels against war. Those who say this are witless. Islam says, kill all the unbelievers just as they would kill you. Does this mean that Muslims should sit back until they are devoured by the unbelievers? Islam says, kill them, namely the non-Muslims, put them to the sword and scatter their armies. Does this mean sitting back until non-Muslims overcome us? Islam says, kill in the service of Allah those who may want to kill you. Does this mean that we should surrender to the enemy? Islam says, whatever good there is exists thanks to the sword and in the shadow of the sword. People cannot be made obedient except with the sword. The sword is the key to paradise, which can be opened only for holy warriors. There are hundreds of other psalms from the Quran and Hadith, sayings of Muhammad, urging Muslims to value war and to fight. Does all that mean that Islam is a religion that prevents men from waging war? I spit upon those foolish souls who make such a claim. Obviously, this is something very, very different than the spirit of the gospel. But where exactly is the contrast? We go to Baltimore, Maryland. Alan, thanks for calling the line of fire.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes. In reference to the statement, the tape you played of, I forgot who his name was. I disagree with him as far as being a true Christian, that we need to take up a militaristic Christianity to fight militaristic Islam. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to go that far, but I do think as a Christian, we need to have a defensiveness about us to defend ourselves, and even in certain situations, offensive for a defensive purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Give you an example. I was talking to a fellow. He doesn't profess to be a Christian, but he believes in nonviolence no matter what. So I said, suppose there was a serial killer. He's killed 30 people, and he's got your daughter. You know he's getting ready to kill her, and you see a window of opportunity whereby you can take him down, take him out, and the only way to do it is to kill him. Maybe you have a shot or whatever situation. You have that moment. I said, what are you going to do? Are you going to let him kill her, or are you going to take the opportunity? He said, well, I trust in the man's humanity, and I try to talk to him, but I just could not use a defensive means or whatever and trust that he would be a humanitarian or whatever. And, you know, I told him there are people out here who are filled with the devil, and they're out to kill. I said, in that situation, I would do whatever I would have to protect myself or my daughter or whatever.
Yeah, and right, Alan, it would be like a police force. Should we not have police force? Can you be a Christian and serve in the police force? We're not talking about just gunning somebody down because you don't like the way they look or the way they talk to you. You're talking about gunning someone down if they're about to take your life or someone else's life, or they're involved in a crime and won't listen. There can be a righteous taking of life, and it's not murder. Thank you for the call, Alan. By the way, Michael Savage did clarify that he was talking about a militant Christianity in Judaism, not a murderous one. Nonetheless, where does one draw the line? And if it's fine for us to defend ourselves against violent attack, then why would anybody ever be martyred?
God of light, hear our cry. Send It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What do we make of Jesus saying, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth"? So the meek inherit the earth, the meek inherit the land, as opposed to the violent and the wicked and the strong-armed and the assertive. It's the meek who inherit the land. Are we looking at this through human eyes and human reasoning and failing to factor in God's intervention? Or are we looking at this in a wise and holistic way so that we are not simply going as sheep to the slaughter? On the flip side, didn't Paul talk about believers in Romans 8 going like sheep to the slaughter because of the persecution that arose for the faith? Isn't that why the Greek word for witness is the word from which we get martyr? Because often to be a witness meant martyrdom. Is it that you defend yourself if you're able, but if you're not able, then you go willingly to martyrdom if necessary? But if you can flee, you flee. Obviously, that's a mandate. When you're persecuted in one city, flee to another. But could it be that you flee if you can't flee, you defend yourself if you can't defend yourself, that you go to martyrdom? Or is the whole idea of fighting back for the gospel contrary to the gospel? It's one thing if there's just a war going on, that's just a war, that let's say we have a territorial dispute with Canada and some trade disputes and somehow we get into a war with them. That's different than, say, Canadian radicals coming into our country. Canadian radical, we'll just make something up, Canadian radical atheists. Again, I'm not saying any atheists would do this. I'm just making this up here. Canadian radical atheists swarming into our cities in America to kill Christians and blow up churches. If we could have security to stop that from happening, would we not do that? Would the war be any different if we then went to war with Canada over it? Are we wrong to make distinctions between the holy and the profane, between the natural and the spiritual? Just putting out questions for your input, 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to Woodbridge, Virginia. All right, let's go to Fairfax, Virginia. Jerry, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello. I really respect the way you're using the scriptures and this topic, and I come from a military family. My father was wounded in the Korean War, and my husband retired in the military. So I'm not a pacifist, but I do appreciate what the scriptures and the tone of the scriptures. And I have two scriptures I want to read and then a comment. One is 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. And then the second scripture is from Ephesians, who tells us who our war is really against. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And my comment is, I teach foreign students English and the Bible, and I've seen that God is calling people out of Islamic countries to become Christians. And so I think where we need to fight the battle first is on our knees. And I think we need to believe that God has already won the battle, and he has plans to draw Christians out of Islamic countries. I've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel if we were less militaristic that more people would come to faith, or is our military actually saving these people's lives so they can come to faith?
Well, I think it's a mixture of both. I don't think we need to take one extreme or the other. I think we need to be careful about wanting to go in and blow up a whole country. Because in that country, God has called men out. And one of the things that's happened that was amazing to me, I heard a story of this. People are going into Islamic countries and going into restaurants, and they ask this question: has anybody had a dream about a man in a white robe? And people will raise their hands. and they'll go and talk to those people, and those people eventually become Christians. So I know God has a plan for all people, and he loves all people. I think we need not to be fearful and out of our fear, attack mm-hmm. whole countries.
Right.
But we need to pray, and then. But I'm not anti-war.
Right.
I'm just
so
anti-
yeah, I understand that there are ways of doing it. Even when you say prayer first, you're not saying prayer first and no action. I don't think in any case we're just trying to attack, quote, whole countries, but can we be indiscriminate, or can we at times not be as careful? Can we look at the whole country as the enemy, whereas it may just be bad leadership or faction that's an enemy? Yeah, these are important questions to raise. Jerry, I appreciate the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Mike, all right, not Mike. Let's go to Brooklyn, New York. Cleveland, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just remember who gave Samson his power when it was destruction time. You know, I mean, it was properly placed to take down thousands. And I know he couldn't do it by himself, and he was assisted by the Holy Spirit. The next thing I want to ask everybody, the tender compassion of the devil is cruelty. You think that dream that Muhammad gets is really, really from heaven? Who will be running ISIS? Who is the mastermind behind Muslim doctrine? We're fighting the devil right now. We are fighting the devil.
So let me ask this. Yeah, let me ask this, my brother. Does that mean that we should focus more on prayer, focus more on evangelism, and not get involved in war, physical war as much? Or do we do both? Do we do spiritual war and engage physically and militarily as well?
Both.
Got it. But don't forget the real enemy that we're dealing with, Satan himself, who wants to destroy men and women, both Muslim and Christian, both Jew and Gentile, of all color, of all background and ethnicity. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Ken, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
We both grew up in New York City, and when I was a hippie, I heard somebody say that we should get rid of the Second Amendment. And even in those days, I said to myself, well, who are you to tell somebody else how they should live? And as time went on, I flung my politics, went all the way to the right. And the old saying, you know, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. Now, down here in North Carolina, I always carry open. And as a Christian for since about the same time that you would receive the Lord, I found that I can walk by faith. But should I also have this sheepdog mentality, you know, which means if should something happen, you know, I'll jump into the fray if need be. But I'll feel that I'll put my faith in the Lord to know what to do when that moment happens, whether I'll need to use that gun. But I think that rather than people like Bloomberg who have armed security people and they're trying to take away the common person's right to self-defense,
right.
What about the common person who, you know, what are you going to do? Call 911 and wait while you're being slaughtered? So it's just a matter of, as a Christian, I believe that you should, actually, I think the government should be training people in small arms fire, small arms use. And I've been training with close quarter combat over the years, the proper use, you know, deadly force, et cetera, et cetera. And it just baffles me how people are so fearful of inanimate objects that make
The only thing, though, Ken, I mean, when you refer to it as an inanimate object that makes a noise, I mean, there is a tremendous amount of gun violence in America compared to other countries, an extraordinary amount of shootings in schools and things that are unheard of almost in other countries. And it seems to be part of our culture. Now, you might argue that the reason for that is because it happens in gun-free zones, and people know these are gun-free zones, so they can go into the school, they can go into the theater, and you're not going to have people who are carrying there. And if they were carrying, then you wouldn't have the violence. But overall, let's just say that we have an excessive gun culture in America compared to some other countries. But the right to carry arms, the Christians' right to carry arms, the place of the military, that I would say is a separate question. But thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I was just handed this internet article, and I'm going to give you my own closing thoughts on this issue in a moment, and then take some more calls in the second hour. But I just handed this internet article going all the way back to October 23rd, 2004, by Dr. Teresa Whitehurst, Why Are Some American Christians So Bloodthirsty? Understanding Pro-War Christians' Indifference to Civilian Deaths. A Christian in Australia asked this question, why are American Christians so bloodthirsty? Why do they support the war in Iraq no matter how many innocent people are made to suffer? We just don't understand why they're willing to kill other people so that they can feel more safe. It's so selfish. According to Dr. Whitehurst, conservative Christianity in the U.S. has succumbed to that which it has in decades past most rigorously warned against, moral relativism. Interesting point. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Berkeley, Massachusetts. Brian, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, hi, doctor. Sometimes I call in from Boston, so I'm Brian from Boston. I just happen to be in Berkeley today. But
all right.
I did want to chime in on a couple things real quick. They say in the last 100 years or so that the death toll from the Russians and the Chinese and their own governments, I guess, the Nazis and all that. They say that the people of those nations and Pol Pot, all these mass genocidal murders, it's around close to 175 million people, have been killed by their own governments. And I think that's what, a lot of people with the Second Amendment, need to keep, we need to keep that in mind, that, our own governments can turn on us, atheistic governments. I am absolutely, for peace and love and sharing the gospel, and just like any other Christian. But I just think that, if the town down from me, a couple towns down over, a couple years ago, five masked men kicked the door in the middle of the night, ran upstairs, raped the mother, raped the daughter.
That absolutely horrific situation.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. Well,
right. So, your bottom line point is what then?
My bottom line is, I think, as a Christian, I don't want to ever have to kill or shoot or hurt anybody. But when we look at the nature of man and the world we live in and whatnot. If a weapon, just pointing that weapon could be enough to turn somebody,
there are right times. There are right times to intervene. There are right times to use force. There are right and even righteous times to do it, even in helping people in foreign countries be liberated from slaughter within their own country. Hey, Brian, I appreciate you weighing in. it's true that we have the militaristic passages in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Joshua, but they were not to be carried out for future generations. In other words, the call to annihilate the exterminate the Canaanites was not a call for Christian believers centuries later to exterminate their enemies. In the Old Testament, the Israelites were called to drive out the Canaanites, and the New Testament were called to drive out demons. So we want to make right application of those passages. We also know that the spirit of radical Islam is based on, or some would say normative Islam, is based on the example of Muhammad. It is based on his career, which was first a spiritual teacher, then a political leader, and then a military leader. He himself engaged in atrocities, and there are many violent verses in the Quran that can be fairly and rightly quoted, as Ayatollah Khomeini and many others have quoted them, to engage in violence against those who might kill you or are simply considered apostates or infidels. So the example of Muhammad and the teaching of Muhammad are very different. Muhammad engaged in beheading those who had surrendered, Jews who had surrendered in one particular famous battle, whereas Jesus told his disciples not to fight back, and he went to the cross and set an example for us of non-retaliation. So the spirit of Jesus and the spirit of Muhammad are very different. The fundamentals of the faith are very different, and often the gospel grows through martyrdom, multiplication by martyrdom. As Christians are cut down, many more are raised up because of the supernatural process, the supernatural life in terms of what happens and what transpires. That being said, certainly, the New Testament does not teach against self-defense. Certainly, the New Testament does not say that all war is wrong and sinful. Otherwise, governments could not bear the sword to fight against evildoers, whether those evildoers are within the country or without the country. And since we are to pray for leaders to be Christian, Romans 13 says they don't bear the sword in vain. 1 Timothy 2 tells us to pray for their salvation. So if we're praying for the salvation of these leaders, kings and governors and others, they become Christian, it doesn't mean that they now are profligate with regard to their responsibilities. So I believe that there can be just war. I believe that there are many righteous instances of self-defense. We as followers of Jesus must take a spirit and attitude of non-retaliation. We as followers of Jesus must have a spirit of non-vengeance, and yet where we can use wisdom, we can protect ourselves from an onslaught, and we can flee, or in right times engage in self-defense, then I believe it is fine to do it. But either way, we could never develop the mentality of advancing the gospel by the sword or primarily being identified as a militaristic people. I believe in that way we would cross a very dangerous line. All right. All that being said, let me encourage you to get your hands on the beautiful Tree of Life Messianic Bible, a family edition. It's one of the most beautiful Bibles I've handled, embossed in the front and back, Hebrew embossing on the back, beautiful artwork within, just a lifetime investment. When you get it, we're sending you free my two-hour DVD debate with Rabbi Shmuley, Who Really Killed Jesus, as well as paying the postage. So take advantage of this. We've extended it through the week. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, the Spirit of Jesus radically goes against the flesh and the world, calling us to put down our sword and take up the cross. Is it true that Islam often leads to violence, but Christianity leads to peace? If that's so, why are there so many Christians in the military? Why do so many Christians push for the right to bear arms? We'll talk about it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, tell me what you think of this, all right? Tell me what you think of this. You hear about Muslims and radical Muslims, and as they're killing people and slaughtering people, they consider them the enemies, the infidels, the occupiers, whatever. They are killing them, they're slaughtering them, they're shouting out, Allahu Akbar, God is great. They are doing this as part of an expression of their faith. We call it barbaric, we call it wrong, we call it ugly. We renounce it. We ask Muslims around the world to renounce it. What's the difference between that and a Christian manufacturer of bombs that the military is going to use to fight those we consider to be evil people, those we consider to be violent people, those we consider to be our enemies or the enemies of our allies? And let's say on the rifles, on the ammunition, on the bombs, scripture verses are engraved or written. Now this has actually happened. Or Christians in the military have written verses on their weapons. What's the difference between them? Are we too militaristic in our mentality? Or is there really an issue of good versus evil? And in this case, the Muslims are killing good people and we're killing evil people. And what about the teaching and example of Jesus? Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. We've had this discussion from different angles in the past on the broadcast. We're going to have it again today. And it's an important issue that cannot be avoided. And I want to hear from you. We had some great calls and interaction with our callers in the last hour. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said to believe the promise of Jesus that his followers shall possess the earth and at the same time to face our enemies unarmed and defenseless, preferring to incur injustice rather than to do wrong ourselves, is indeed a narrow way. At the same time, Dietrich Bonhoeffer ultimately was part of resistance that wanted to take out Adolf Hitler. Was he not? According to Ben Witherington, one of the world's foremost New Testament scholars, a professor at Asbury Seminary, he said, for me, part of being holy, being pure, being clean, being like Jesus is being a pacifist. Will that then mean that we shouldn't have helped defeat the Nazis in World War II without American involvement? All of Europe could have come under the power of Nazism. All Jews could have been wiped out. Wouldn't it have been the cause of Jesus to stand for the victims of Nazism and to oppose the Nazi onslaught? Just putting questions out. Our Vernon Grounds, who is the late president of Denver Seminary, said this, unambiguously denounce and renounce war. Recognize that obedience to our Lord Jesus is the master criterion of discipleship. And David Huckema of Calvin College said the early Christian community understood Jesus' commands to prohibit the bearing of arms. 866-34-TRUTH. When we come back, I want to read a number of scriptures to you that deal with the teaching of Jesus and the teaching of the early church when it comes to violence. But why are so many conservative Christians on the front lines of the right to bear arms here in America? Why are so many conservative Christians on the front lines of serving in the military? And aren't we indebted to some of these very people for our freedoms that we love and enjoy here in America? How does it all work and fit together? 866-348-7884.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. I want to play a clip going back to World War II about FDR and Winston Churchill. This is clip number 6. As they are singing hymns and obviously celebrating victory, and it was certainly looked at as a victory, not just of freedom against totalitarianism, but perhaps even of Christian nations working together to defeat Nazism, which had risen in a professing Christian nation but was itself hostile to Christianity and simply used Christianity as a tool. Clip number 6.
On Sunday, Roosevelt was carried on board the British battleship for a morning service. "If nothing else had happened while we were here," Roosevelt told an aide, "that joint service would have cemented us."
All the ship's companies all mixed up and sharing the hymn sheets and everything, and it really did seem rather wonderful and very moving. My father chose the hymns very carefully, his favorites.
"The same language, the same hymns," Churchill said later. "It was a great hour to live."
Now, I'm not talking about the personal faith of Winston Churchill or FDR or the lack thereof, just talking about the idea of singing hymns together. Even Onward Christian Soldier, which we sang in the church when I was saved in the early 70s, but never dawned on me once that there was any military imagery of it whatsoever, that it had anything to do with fighting a physical battle. I understood entirely spiritual terms. 866-34-TRUTH. Matthew 26, when Peter goes to fight to defend Jesus, Jesus says, "Put your sword back in its place, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way?" You say, okay, but that's just trying to stop Jesus from going to the cross. It was his destiny to go to the cross and die for our sins. This is not a general principle that you can't ever use the sword. Then you might say, but didn't Jesus say all who draw the sword will die by the sword? Isn't he saying that violence begets violence? I'm putting out questions for your discussion and input. Peter wrote this, 1 Peter 2:21. I would say Peter would know the heart and mind of Jesus. "To this you recall, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example, that you should follow in his steps." So we follow the same path that Jesus followed. If we go to the cross, we go to the cross. Jesus tells Peter by what death he will glorify the Lord. And we know we're called to suffering, we're called to persecution, we're called to opposition. So how does this work out? H.S. Vigevano, in his book, Jesus the Revolutionary, wrote this: "Our world has witnessed many a revolution, but none as effective as the one that divided history into B.C. and A.D., Every revolution involves the shedding of blood. So did this one. Not as much blood, perhaps, but the quality of the one far outweighs the quantity of others. Revolutionary, indeed, this mission to begin with a cross and sway the whole world through suffering and love. Revolutionary to build a church on the sacrifice that offers man forgiveness and atonement with God." We know that often through history, the church has multiplied through martyrdom. We also know that Christianity is almost being extinguished from certain parts of the Middle East because of severe Islamic persecution. We've asked the question before, we ask it again: when is it right to fight back? When is it right to bear arms? Why does a faith that is based not on the violent example of Muhammad, but on the lamb-like example of Jesus, why is a faith based on that often so militaristic here in America? We're so related to carrying guns. I'm not advocating a position. I'm putting out questions for discussion. 866-348-7884. We'll start in Dallas, Texas. You, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I I think that the question actually, not that you're not presenting it right, you're asking, I think, an important question, but it should be clear that, you know, it's not, is Christianity the peaceful religion? Look at many what we call good Christians that go to war and have fought for the country and protected us. Therefore, is Christianity peaceful? Because here we are, we have Christians that are fighting and killing in war. You know, because it's, I think that's the age old, that's the problem, is saying, is Islam peaceful religion? Then look at Muslims. And that's incorrect, because people are people, and what they do, although they call themselves a religion, doesn't necessarily mean it's the religion. It has to go back to the words that define that religion. So if I go to the Quran, I have read it, and I look to it to see if it's a peaceful religion, and it's not.
Right, right. There's no question. Right, if you go back to the founders, there's no question. The example of Jesus versus the example of Muhammad. If you look at the documents through Islamic history that advocate violence, they're going back over and over and over again to the original sources. Hamas, for example, a Hamas manifesto. 10 fundamental principles of faith of Hamas are as follows. 1, Hamas swears to conduct a holy war over Palestine against the Jews until Allah's victory is achieved. The land must be cleansed of the filth and evil of the tyrannical conquerors. How will this happen? Blood must flow. There must be widows. There must be orphans. Hands and limbs must be cut, and the limbs and blood must be spread everywhere in order that Allah's religion stand on its feet. here is a word spoken by Ayatollah Fazl al-Mahalati. But he who takes up a gun, a dagger, a kitchen knife, or even a pebble with which to harm and kill the enemies of the faith has his place assured in heaven. An Islamic State is a state of war until the whole world sees and accepts the light of the true faith. You cannot, and you're exactly right, you cannot compare this to the teachings of Jesus. There is no support for this mentality in the New Testament. Now, the question of self-defense, the question of just wars, that's a separate question. But this mentality, this spirit, this attitude, this mindset, absolutely unrelated to the faith that Jesus established in the world. Thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. I quoted this the first hour. Let me quote it again. Ayatollah Khomeini, those who know nothing of Islam pretend that Islam counsels against war. Those who say this are witless. And he has text after text or example after example. Islam says, kill all the unbelievers just as they would kill you. He says, what do you think this means? Islam says whatever good there is exists thanks to the sword, and in the shadow of the sword, people cannot be made obedient except with the sword. That is a totally different mindset and attitude. Fort Worth, Texas. Rich, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you so much, sir. When we talk about a gun or the right to bear arms down here in Texas, frankly, as an African-American male, I'm disturbed by the vehement attitude that many here have to, you know, to bear those arms because of the attitudes and in many cases the racism that I see. And when I couple those, you know, I walk in fear even as a Christian male because I do not bear an arm, and or you know I don't carry a weapon, and I'm always curious about why the attitude and how the racism can be justified within a Christian mindset. And thus, you know, this person now has a firearm.
All right, so let me just separate this from what you perceive to be an issue of racism and just look at the issue of Christians advocating the right to bear arms as part of a fundamental American right. Do you feel that is something that Christians should not be advocating because of the tendency to violence, or do you feel that that still is an important American right that Christians should be championing?
I don't feel that Christians should be championing it. I feel like we shouldn't be driving that discussion,
mm-hmm.
because I think that when we, and it would be the equivalence of a sword, as Christ talked about, living by that and then dying by it, I think that it is counter to the love that God had for all men.
And all right, so, tell you what, stay right there. Got a break. I want to ask you a couple of questions on the other side of the break. You've obviously thought about this. Should Christians be the ones who champion the right to bear arms? Should Christians be the ones who champion the right to bear arms here in America? What do you think?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, we're talking about God and guns. I want to replay a quote from the first hour from Michael Savage that we'll come back to in a moment. 866-348-7884. There's a new book by Mike Huckabee, God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy. I have tremendous respect for Mike Huckabee. I have tremendous respect for the seriousness of his commitment to Jesus, for his gracious, gentle demeanor, for the wisdom with which he answers difficult questions, for his unashamed stance for righteousness and biblical values. Absolutely have great respect for him. His new book, God, Guns, Grits, and Gravy, has a chapter two actually, Guns and Why We Have Them. Now, I haven't read the book. I saw some critics attacking the book, and of course they were attacking the gun culture part of it as well. But should that be part of a conservative Christian position? That we are pro gun carrying, the right to bear arms, because it actually saves lives, because it's part of our history, because most of the massacres take place where people unjustly have arms or somehow got arms when they weren't stable and shouldn't have been able to get them, but that they carried out their acts of mass murder in gun-free zones, and if there were people there who were carrying, they would have stopped them immediately. Or is that just going to turn society into the Wild West? Part of the question is very, very relevant in the day in which we live, when state after state debates the issues about the right to carry on the one hand. On the other hand, while we are engaged in military operations around the world that we believe are for the good of the countries that we're working with and for our overall security and the security of our allies, many Christians are involved in the military and have sacrificed, as well as non-Christians, of course, have sacrificed for our country, for our very freedoms. Yet there is a clear emphasis in the teaching of Jesus about non-retaliation. How does this all work out? 866-34-TRUTH. So back to Fort Worth, Texas. Rich, thanks for holding through the break.
Yeah.
So you were saying that in your mind, the strong association of conservative Christians in America with the right to bear arms is somewhat contradictory. And you also said that as a black American, is this something you perceive as more a white conservative Christian emphasis as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Within the black community, and I can't speak for the entirety, obviously, of the black populace here, but I don't find the fervency, if you will, to bear an arm. Now, that is not to say, obviously, that there aren't any within the hood, you know, that I grew up in that shouldn't have been there, but I don't see the vehemence, you know, to carry, to become licensed to carry a firearm. I think when we look at conservative Christianity, I see a strong association to that belief, you know, the right to bear arms. And it's confusing to me, and it really appears to be a type of another gospel to me. And mm-hmm. I say that because the chief thing that Christ taught us was love and trust. And I find those to be somewhat diametrically opposed, because it's difficult to love if I feel like I have to carry a firearm, which means that I don't trust and I really can't carry out that mission of love in its fullness.
All right, so you raise some interesting questions, and I'd love for some others to weigh in. And of course, some would say that yes, we're trusting God, but we're also using wisdom. We put on seatbelts. Many put on seatbelts even before it was the law to put on seatbelts. We want to have strong police presence, or a godly or righteous police presence in our cities, so that people know that the law is going to be upheld, and that it's a matter of, we know we're in a wicked, fallen world, and carrying the gun may be an act of love because you want to protect your family, you want to protect someone else. But you raise important questions. I appreciate it, Rich. Thanks for laying that out. Why? Give me the argument for it. Again, thanks for the call. Give me the argument for it. 866-34-TRUTH. Why it is so important for Christians in America to stand by our constitutional right or our Bill of Rights right to bear arms. And again, it's different from the culture I grew up with, different than my own upbringing, even at a hunting level. I'm not around guns a lot. But there are many conservative Christians who are, gung-ho for guns. By the way, the verb with an ing at the end, championing, I had a hard time saying, and my caller had a hard time saying, I actually have to think about it as you say, championing. That's it. All right. So why are so many conservative Christians championing the right to bear arms? Let's listen to this Michael Savage quote, and then I want to go back to your calls. At the end of the hour, I'll give you some of my own reflections, and I've got some quotes to share on martyrdom as well. So this is Michael Savage, clip number 4. Now, he clarified that he was talking about militant, not murderous. But listen to what he has to say.
For the Christians to survive in a world of militant Islam, we must have a militant Christianity arise in this world. Because look at the Middle East. Tell me what turning the other cheek has gotten the Christians in Iraq. Tell me what turning the cheek has gotten the Christians in Syria. Wherever you look, turning the other cheek has gotten them a grave. Or have them set on fire. Only a militant Christianity can survive the 21st century. Only a more militant Judaism can survive the 21st century. And you must fight fire with fire. A militancy must replace a passivity.
Do you agree with that? Now, obviously, Michael Savage is not the spokesman for the gospel. What about Revelation 12:11? This is how the believers overcame the wrath of Satan. They overcame by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony and by not loving their lives even to the point of death. As opposed to, they overcame by militantly fighting back and saying, you take up the sword against us, we'll take up the sword against you. On the other hand, if you are armed here to carry in America, and you knew that some crazed group of drunkard, hell's angels, atheist, radical Muslims wrapped into one were coming to attack your family, and you had the ability to get out of there or take them out. Police didn't get there on time, but you had the ability to save your family, and you were licensed to carry. Would you do it? Would that be a righteous thing? We'll talk about it. 866-348-7884. Remember, friends, we're extending now. It is through the rest of this week, the Tree of Life version of the Bible, a new messianic translation, beautifully done, but in a special family edition, one of the most beautiful Bibles I've ever handled, one that you'll keep for a lifetime. When you order it this week, we're paying the postage and giving you a free $20 debate video, probably my most famous debate of all time. In any case, go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Find out more there. Watch your video that'll tell you about this special Bible.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Nonviolence was kind of Jesus's trademark. Kind of his big thing. To not follow that part of it is like joining Greenpeace and hating whales.
Yeah, that was the voice of Bill Maher. And of course, the example of Jesus, the teaching of Jesus, very different from the example of Muhammad and the teaching of Muhammad. The question is, again, how these things work out in practical life. What's the difference between non-retaliation and self-defense? What's the difference between a just war and Islamic terrorism? I'm going to go to the phones in a moment, 866-34-TRUTH, but let me say categorically and clearly and definitively that there is nothing in the Gospels, nothing in our faith that can possibly support the type of barbarous acts that we have seen in recent years from Al-Shabaab in Kenya, from Boko Haram in Nigeria, from Al-Qaeda in Yemen or wherever on our own shores, from ISIS all over the Middle East. There is no possible basis for any such acts through the gospel, but there is a basis for such acts in the teaching and example of Muhammad. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Lee, welcome to the line of fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown? Can you hear me fine?
Yeah, I can.
I really appreciate you having this discussion because I think as Christians, we need to iron it out and it needs to be discussed. There's one person online, his name is, his name slips my mind, it'll come back to me in a second. But he has extensive teaching on just wars, self-defense. He has an extensive teaching. One of the things that he explains is that during the Ten Commandments, everything, and I just want your opinion about it, every commandment that has a negative has a positive. Kind of like, thou shalt not steal, that's the negative. The positive is that you should work honest with your hands and provide for those, for your loved ones. Thou shouldn't covet, then the positive is, you know, you should appreciate and be thankful for what you have. Now, when it gets to thou shalt not murder, he says that the positive of that is that you should protect and preserve life. And he builds an incredible case for that. And that's the first thing. The second thing, I don't want to take up too much time, is it seems to me when Peter was going to cut Malchus' head off and cut his ear, it seems, and Jesus says, return the sword to its sheath. It seems to me as though Jesus was aware that he had a sword, not a fish fillet knife, and he should have said, what do you have that for? You should get rid of it. It seems like they would have already had conversations. What's that thing dangling on your hip there, or whatever, right, on the back, whatever it was? Why did he not say, you need it? What do you have there for? You need to get rid of it. Instead, he says, return it back to its sheath. And so what else do you use swords for against animals and other things, maybe vines and branches that are in your way as you go along the path? But it seems as though Jesus was aware that Peter had a sword, and he told him to put it in your sheath. He did not say, get rid of it.
Sorry, just to jump in, Lee, sorry to cut you off there, but I've got a break coming up and I wanted to respond. Regarding the second point, they had already had a conversation, Luke 23, about the swords. So Jesus certainly knew they were there. And we can talk about the proper use of the sword. Romans 13 does, that the government, for example, bears the sword against evildoers. It's a spirit of retaliation, in this case, trying to stop Jesus from going to the cross. Regarding the Ten Commandments, Judaism has tradition that all of the 613 commandments are contained in the 10, but certainly the command to choose life and preserve life and save life is very sacred in Jewish and Christian tradition. So if by taking up the sword you can save life, isn't that preventing murder? Those would be the points.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I encourage you later today to go to the website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. Not only click on latest article to catch up on my articles, one that was posted earlier today is the New York Times wants us to rewrite the Bible. So you can read that. That's a real eye-opener. You can also catch up on our latest videos on YouTube. But I encourage you as well to listen to the first hour, where we got lots of very, very interesting calls, and I weighed in with some thoughts at the end. And now through the second hour, lots of interesting calls, and I'm going to weigh in with some other thoughts at the end. I'm raising questions and taking calls, and then you share your views as opposed to advocating my position throughout the show. We go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Justin, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Thanks for this opportunity. So,
you're welcome.
So here's my point. I think the conservative Christians definitely have a conflict of interest when it comes to the pacifist side of Christ. So, for instance, there is really no mention of Christ supporting violence. In fact, when one of his disciples cut off the ear of the soldier, Christ went out of his way to put it back. And he says, love thy enemy. If you get hit on the cheek, on the other side. Imagine a parallel where the disciples were fighting for their rights to their sword, instead of spreading the gospel and being martyrs for their cause. That's the hypocrisy I'm trying to point out.
Right. So do you feel that excludes all involvement in military or all self-defense or just a general attitude and emphasis?
Right. So the military nature, I don't think it's got anything to do with religion. I think as human beings, we are naturally prone to conflict, and what happens is we come up with one reason for why we're fighting each other. It could be religion today, 20 years from now, it could be another reason. Conflict is just the ugly side of humanity. But as far as the scriptures go, the conservative Christians have a very selective approach to the scriptures. Their infatuation with weapons tends to override their faith in the teachings of Jesus Christ.
All right,
and
got it.
That's my personal opinion.
Got it. All right, let's just focus in on what Justin mentioned, our infatuation, conservative Christians in America, our infatuation with weapons can override our devotion to the teachings of Jesus. What do you think about that? Another provocative statement. Justin, thank you for weighing in eloquently. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to Dallas, Texas. Paul, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I just really wanted to encourage that fella in Fort Worth to trust in the Father, not in men. Men will always fail us, but God will never fail. That's it.
Got it. All right. I appreciate you weighing in. Thank you. 866-34-TRUTH. Powhatan, Virginia. Daryl, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. How are you today?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm calling because I think that as conservative Christians, we should support gun rights. And, you know, we need to differentiate between our Christianity and being American. You know, and God has established a governing power for the purpose of going after those that do evil. And, you know, one of the things that we see with the right to have guns is that it's a restraint of evil. I don't care what anybody says. If people know that other people have guns, they're going to be less likely to go after them. You know, so I think that, you know, whether or not we decide personally to own guns, that's our own choice. I you know, myself, I love target shooting, things of that nature, but mm-hmm. I don't carry a gun. I don't feel the need to, you know, and
right. But I think you raised two important points, Darryl. One is that bearing arms or the use of weapons is designed to, aside from someone's hunting or just target practice, whatever, is designed to restrain evil. It's not to promote violence. It is to restrain violence and restrain evil. But more importantly, on the larger issue here, you raised the point about being Americans and being Christians. Not everything American is Christian. See, we often make that wrong association. We often think that the American way is the Christian way. There are many things in our country that do flow from an understanding of gospel truth or biblical foundations. And there are many other things in our country that absolutely do not. There are many other things in our country that are contrary to the teaching and example of Jesus. And yet we often associate patriotism with the kingdom of God. That can be dangerous. And that's an important distinction to make. 866-34-TRUTH. Jacksonville, Florida. Keith, you're on the line of fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having this show today.
You're welcome.
Hello? Are you, okay, yeah. There was an echo there. It's gone now. Hey, I just want to call up, touch on some things other people said where they were kind of wavering or just thinking, well, maybe it's against the faith to carry a gun or have a gun for self-protection. To me, it's an individual choice. You know, if you, quote-unquote, have the faith, not to, you know, worry about it and know that God will protect you. By all means, you know, God bless you, walk in that faith, all right? As far as the other, you know, for me, I'm not going to rely on the mercy of a criminal, you know, and I believe God may tell someone to be, you know, to be armed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm the, quote-unquote, the intended victim of someone's criminality, if I'm not armed, if I'm just, you know, take what you want and go, I'm relying on their mercy. I'm not relying on, you know, anything but their mercy.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm armed, I can defend myself. Now, when it comes to family, I'm sooner would defend family than I would defend myself. As far as...
Oh, sorry. I accidentally cut you off there. Go ahead. So you defend yourself, your family. What if you were being, Keith, what if you were being persecuted for the gospel? What if someone was trying to kill you, you live in a Muslim country, they're trying to kill you and your family because you're followers of Jesus. Would you feel you just flee or you lay down your lives or do you try to take out the people persecuting you?
Me, I would hope that I would die to where God gets the glory. My family, I'm going to be totally honest, if it was family, wife, and children, I would resist until there was nothing left to resist with.
Got it. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, all clear. I appreciate you weighing in, honestly and candidly. I want to get to as many callers as possible. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Concord, North Carolina. Randy, welcome to the line of fire.
Hey, how's it going, Dr. Brown?
Going great, man.
So... My take on it is this, two quick statements. One, I don't believe Jesus is a pacifist. I think he had a pacifist phase in the earthly ministry because it was essential to laying the foundation of his overall plan of redemption. But when he returns, he is not going to wash feet. He did that part. When he returns, it's time to set things in order. So I'm not saying that necessarily leads to the conclusion of my opinion for Christians and guns, but it's kind of just a related thing that I wanted to throw in there. The second thing is, ironically enough, when I was a thief and a drug abuser, I was also a pacifist. All of those things changed through the process of time after becoming a believer.
Mm.
When my wife got pregnant, and we had our boy, something turned on inside of me that said, it is my responsibility to protect them by every means that I can. And so through the process of time, I ended up owning a few firearms, partially for just the intrinsic enjoyment of, you know, the skill of it, which is, you know, benign and neutral, but also because I want to have, you know, every means I can to do what is my responsibility for my family.
Got it. Hey, loud and clear, and an interesting transition from a thief and drug abuser pacifist to follower of Jesus who has the right to carry arms to protect his family and who looks forward to Jesus returning in flaming fire. All right, we will be right back on the Line of Fire. Thanks for the call.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, our phones have been lit up. Our phone lines have been lit up for much of these last 2 hours. I want to get to a few more calls, as many as possible, so do your best to get right to your key point. I'm sure there's a lot you have to say, but I want to get to as many calls as possible. Then I want to read quite a quote about martyrdom and give you some closing perspectives here. 866-34-TRUTH. We start with Nikki in Dallas, Texas. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Hello, Nikki.
Hi. Yes.
Go ahead. Yes, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, and it's funny because other people have sort of made my point. But I was thinking about the difference between being an American and a Christian. And unfortunately, I feel like we automatically equate being American with Christian, but not really understanding what true Christianity means.
You're right.
Just because it was founded on some of the principles does not mean that everything is Christian. And I feel, honestly, if it came down to it, and this is my opinion, that if we had a choice to flee or to resist, it depends on, I think it would depend on how much notice we had. That I think he would be okay with us if it came down to, it came upon us suddenly, we're trying to protect ourselves versus we know it's coming and we sit there and decide we're just going to take them out instead. I think that's a completely different situation.
Yep.
And if you look at even the life of Christ, when it wasn't his time to be killed, he fled in many ways. Like, he walked through the crowd. He left.
Right.
He didn't go back.
Right. And he did teach, Nikki, in Matthew, the 10th chapter, when you're persecuted in one city, flee to another. And rather than saying, kill your persecutors, he said, pray for them. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who persecute you and despitefully use you, as opposed to wipe them out. So I agree with your points there. And let's see, we go to Louisville, Kentucky. Steve, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
As far as our military goes, we have liberated. You have to think of the number of countries that our military has liberated as the United States. You think about we liberated Germany from Hitler. We liberated the Philippines. We liberated part of Korea. South Korea is just astounding. I was over there for a year and 3 months, and it's astounding. And we had a lot to do with that, and it come out from a gun, you know. And so as far as the championing of the Second Amendment, I would have to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I both have a friend in common, and that is somebody who carried a gun in three wars, and that's Milt Raphael, and
yep.
Which is a graduate, you know. And so,
in fact, Steve, there was a debate that Milt did with one of the students when he was in school, and Milt serving the Lord, you know, his 80s, 90s, just an amazing man. But he graduated; he was 76 years old. And he had fought. He fought in three wars. He fought in World War II. He fought the Korean War. He fought in Vietnam War. And when he did the debate with the student, I think he came marching in his military uniform with the flag. That kind of settled it. That ends the debate right there. But Steve, no question whatsoever that America has carried the sword in many righteous causes and has saved millions and millions of lives. There is, without a doubt, a righteous use of the sword. I do believe we can often be too militaristic in our thinking, or just too American in our thinking, and associate being American with being Christian. But absolutely, the sword has been used and is used for good and must be used for good. Steve, I appreciate the call. Let me give you some closing thoughts here. Number one, we have to guard against a hawkish mentality that thinks that taking up arms is the solution to every situation and that just wants to fight violence with violence. We just have to be aware of that, because often it's part of our cultural upbringing. So that's the first thing, because many innocent civilians also die in these wars, and sometimes there needs to be more forethought before engaging in war and just having the let's wipe out the enemy mentality. That's the first thing. The second thing is we have to be careful in our own lives to guard against the spirit of retaliation. Without question, Jesus taught against that. Jesus taught against the mindset of when you're insulted and you're slapped on the right cheek and publicly shamed, fight back, get what's entitled to. No, we're not talking about self-defense now, but talking about a spirit of retaliation. We have to guard against that. And then we must recognize that although self-defense is important and military intervention is important, that part of our faith will require us to lay our lives down. And this is a reality for believers around the world who are not able to flee and are not able to defend themselves. And Eberhard Arnold, radical German Christian leader, died in 1935, said this: "The early Christians were revolutionaries of the spirit, heralds of the last judgment and the coming transformation. They had to be ready for martyrdom at any moment. Their witness meant that they had to reckon with being sentenced to death by state and society. Therefore, martyrs were those witnesses ready to die for their faith. Those who bore this testimony before kings and judges with the steadfastness of soldiers of God. They were martyrs, that is, confessors, even if they did not have to die. To give witness is the essence of martyrdom. Martyrs uphold the truth of their testimony as eyewitnesses of the Lord and his resurrection. They see Christ and become his prophetic spirit bearers. Through the spirit, the blood witness of the martyrs becomes part of the decisive battle waged by Jesus. The battle in which he himself died as champion and leader of the future. By dying, he finally judged and routed the hostile powers of the present age. Put to death by the most devout Jewish people in the Roman state, Christ fettered and disarmed the demons and their darkness through his cross. Since then, each new martyrdom, each new dying with Christ, becomes a celebration of victory over the forces of Satan." That is a perspective we must hold to when so many of our brothers and sisters are being martyred around the world. Friends, just another reminder, we're extending through this week an offer, one of the most popular offers we've ever had in our ministry, so we brought it back again, the beautiful family edition of the Messianic Bible, the Tree of Life version of the Bible, a great new translation. I played a role in the translation as well, part of the team of Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars involved, but this is just a gorgeous Bible. When you order it, we're not only paying the postage, but we're also giving you perhaps my most famous debate with Rabbi Shmuley, who really killed Jesus, took place right before Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ movie came out. We'll give you that free as well. Plus, we'll pay the postage. So call or order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. Or right on the website, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. Go there. You can also watch a video that will tell you more. My bottom line today, the spirit of Jesus is the spirit of the overcomer. And even when we are put to death and go like lambs to the slaughter, we rise and overcome, and the faith goes on.